One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here, and you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hey.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
You're fantastic.
Yeah.
I like the way you said that.
Change up how you say
it. The cadence?
Sure.
Sure.
So, do you have any news?
Do I have any news? I talked to my mom after our Wizard of Oz episode, and in the episode I mentioned how the Wicked Witch of the West traumatized many children. And I did not realize that my mother was one of those traumatized children to the point where she had to go to the doctor because she wasn't sleeping for a week straight and she had to be put on a mild sedative.
That is wild.
Because of the Wicked Witch. Isn't that so funny?
That's so crazy. I just, who knew the Wicked Witch has touched someone so close to us, you know?
Yeah. Also, our merch is still on sale, I believe, for Black Friday. I think so. Yeah, because this comes out before Thanksgiving. So
true.
The link will be in the description or you can find it in our Instagram bio. But without further ado, I think we have nothing else to say. Let's just jump into the story, shall we?
Yep.
On January 15th, 2009, U.S. Airways Flight 1549 was scheduled to be a short trip from New York City to Charlotte, North Carolina. In the cockpit was 57-year-old Captain Chesley Sullenberger, or Captain Sully, as we're going to call him, and 49-year-old First Officer Jeffrey Skiles. The pair had been flying together for 4 days already, and the upcoming flight would be the last one of their trip. And after that, they were both looking forward to a few days off at home. The crew and Captain Sully had flown in only an hour before that from Charlotte, so on the way back, First Officer Skiles would be flying the plane, which is a common thing to share duties among pilots.
Yeah, right. Like the co-pilot will switch off, especially if it's a long flight.
Right.
Right.
So I guess they just had just come to New York and now they're going back. So it's kind of a longer leg for them. For First Officer Skiles, the flight on the A320 with Captain Sully was the first he would be doing without an instructor on that specific type of plane.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. As he had just recently completed his training on the Airbus. Before that, he had flown the Boeing 737 and the Fokker 100? What is that?
Guys, we need better names.
F-O-K-K-E-R. Yeah, for a second I thought I got it wrong, but it is actually F-O-K-K-E-R, Fokker.
Did you have Siri say it?
No, but I just, you know, I doubted myself because it sounds so silly. Anyway, he had been a captain at one point of these two planes. Even though he had a spotless record, he had been demoted to first officer due to financial difficulties of the airline he formerly worked at. So now he was first officer. January 15th was a typical New York winter day with temperatures below freezing. Clay Presley was on the flight that day and on his way home to Charlotte. He said it was pretty cold and had been snowing a little bit, and it had kind of cleared up, but there was still a storm coming in, so everyone was hoping that this flight would get going soon, so they didn't have to get delayed more or possibly even have to get on a later flight. There were 150 passengers on board Airbus 320, and at 3:25 p.m., flight 1549 was cleared for takeoff from runway 4. And finally, it was time for takeoff. There was nothing at all that could indicate that this takeoff would be any different than any other flight both men had ever done. Full power was applied, and First Officer Skiles took the aircraft into the air. Captain Sully ironically remarked, "What a sight of the Hudson today," as they took off.
That is hilarious.
Little did he know that they would get a much closer look at the Hudson in only a few short minutes. Patrick Harton was one of the controllers handling air traffic out of LaGuardia that day, which is apparently one of the most stressful jobs in the world. Air traffic controllers are responsible for every person on every airplane under their control. I could imagine that would be a very stressful job.
Oh, yeah. I mean, any time that you ever see it in the movies, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, the planes are never on schedule, right?
Or that, and also there's just a million of them, and you have a million different things to, like, keep track of at once, and you can't let any of them hit into each other.
Right. It's, like, your responsibility to make sure the planes don't hit each other. And then you just got to keep landing people, taking them off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do these people just get rotated out every 6 months? Like,
I could see it having a high turnover rate, but honestly, I don't know.
Or just like, it will suck, but you'll get 3 months off or something like
that.
Yeah,
maybe it's like that. I really don't know. But it is one of the more stressful jobs a person can have.
For sure. The other thing I was thinking is, you mentioned that these two pilots had been with each other for 4 days.
Yeah.
It's just such a weird profession that you could not know someone, and then you get on a plane, kind of your lives are in each other's hands, and you're going to spend 4 days with each other.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It is kind of weird. But at that point, I mean, they knew each other well enough, so.
Yeah.
Flight 1549 was set to leave northeast out of LaGuardia and then begin a slow turn south toward Charlotte. Patrick Harton was in charge of around 3 to 4 airplanes at a time, and Flight 1549 seemed to be a very routine flight that he had dealt with thousands of times. Captain Sully said, quote, "Flight 1549 initially, like all other flights for so long, was completely routine and unremarkable for the first 100 seconds. But this very suddenly became the worst day of my life." Just after takeoff, the plane was traveling about 316 feet per second and had reached about 2,800 feet. Jeffrey Skiles had seen something just out of the corner of his eye to the right, but still ahead of the airplane. Captain Sully recalled he saw that it was a line of birds that were about 3 football fields ahead of the plane, which meant there wasn't enough time to maneuver away from these birds. And within only a second, the birds then flooded the windshield of the plane as if it were a Hitchcock film. Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The holiday season is upon us, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, delight, and that it's exactly what I wanted feeling. They scour the globe for original, handmade, absolutely remarkable things. Somehow they know exactly the perfect gift for every single person you know. I've had my eye on this pickleball crew neck. The graphic on the sweater is Pickles playing pickleball, and I absolutely love it. Alex and I have been very into pickleball recently, and I could just imagine us rolling up to the court looking like that and just meaning business. And I love Uncommon Goods website. It's so easy to navigate and find exactly what you want for literally everyone. It's the best. And when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out for the holiday season. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/nottoday. That's uncommongoods.com/nottoday for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. And this was a big flock of large birds. The species was later found out to be Canada geese, which weigh around 8 to 12 pounds and have a 5 to 6 foot wingspan. Per bird. And there was a lot of them.
Damn. How did they not get out of the way?
Well,
you know, like, the plane's not quiet.
No, but I mean, it was moving very fast. So
that's true.
And also they were by an airport. So they were hearing a lot of planes, you know? So these birds struck the airplane along the leading edges of the wings, the nose, and worst of all, into the center or the core of both jet engines. Jet engines are turbines. They're finely balanced machinery spinning at tens of thousands of revolutions per minute, and having multiple 10-pound objects go through each of them at the center was extremely damaging and disruptive. Everyone on board heard and felt this gigantic boom, and it almost seemed like they had stopped midair. First Officer Skiles yelled, "Oh shit," and Sully said, "Yeah."
Yeah. Is he a New York guy?
I don't know. I don't know if that's exactly how he said it, but he said something like, "Yeah." Yeah, I don't know.
What do you say?
Yeah. Immediately, Captain Sully could hear the awful noises of the machinery being damaged, which he had never heard before. And there were these terrible vibrations that he had never felt before. One of the passengers yelled out in the cabin, "One of the engines is on fire." Passenger Brad Wenzel, who sat in seat 21C, still remembers the quote-unquote massive impact after the plane struck the flock of geese. He said, "I had a perfect view of that left engine where I was sitting, and it was on fire. It was sparks coming out, flames coming out. You just knew something was wrong." And that was when Captain Sully...
I'm sorry.
Like, yeah, right? Yeah,
the flames, you just knew something was wrong.
You knew something was wrong.
The engine's on fire.
I don't think that's supposed to be like that. That was when Captain Sully got the confirmation on what he believed had just happened as he smelled the burning bird odor coming into the cabin from the engines. The thrust loss was sudden. They had basically lost both engines at the same time, and it was symmetrical damage. He said, quote, "It felt as if the bottom had fallen out of our world." Captain Sully said his body responded immediately to this sudden, life-threatening stress. He could feel his pulse immediately shoot up, his blood pressure spike, and his perceptual field narrow into tunnel vision because of the stress. Only 13 seconds after their problem began, Captain Sully took control of the plane back from First Officer Skiles. Captain Sully said he can still vividly remember his first thoughts were, "This can't be happening, and this doesn't happen to me." After 4 decades of flying, Captain Sully had never been so challenged on an airplane that he doubted the outcome. That thought was then followed by, unlike all those other flights he had done for 42 years, this one would probably not end with the aircraft on a runway undamaged. And he was okay with that as long as he could solve whatever problem they had. Of all of his years of flying, he had never experienced a single engine failure, let alone a complete one. He said, "Within 8 seconds, the realization hit me. It was the most sickening feeling ever." After taking over, Captain Sully immediately started the APU, which is the Auxiliary Power Unit, which would later be revealed to be very beneficial to the outcome of the flight. Skiles pulled out the QRH, or Quick Reference Handbook, which is a step-by-step guide to dealing with emergencies, and he looked for the checklist for the loss of thrust on both engines. Basically, what the hell do we do when we lose both of our engines? And Captain Sully called Mayday back to air traffic control. When there is an emergency on board, Patrick Harton said, as an air traffic controller, you go from focused state into a hyper-focused state. You have to focus on the emergency itself. Harton instructed Sully to return back to LaGuardia by turning left. Skiles was thinking they would have to restart the engine, so he began instructing Captain Sully to do that, and he had full faith that they would be able to restart them. But that wasn't going to work. At that point, the airplane had become basically a powerless glider descending at over 1,000 feet per minute. And they had only reached about 3,000 feet.
Yeah, I was going to say, number one, that is way slower than I would have thought.
What do you mean?
1,000 feet per minute?
Oh,
I mean, you
sure.
know how long a minute is?
Yeah.
I mean, they're only 3,000 feet in the air. That's a half mile. Like, you could see a half mile.
Yeah.
Like, the plane would look pretty close.
Yes.
So, the fact that they're going to take 3 minutes to hit the ground is crazy to me. With no engine.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's made to glide, right? Like, it's not just the engine. It's also, like, how it's engineered to, like, be in the sky.
Yeah. The Bernoulli effect, blah, blah, blah. I didn't pay attention, okay? I'm just saying, isn't it crazy?
Yes.
Both engines fail. It's still going to take you 3 minutes to get on the ground.
That is crazy to me, but also comforting. Hey.
That is very comforting, yeah.
Even if the engines fail, you're still remaining in the sky. Isn't that fun?
Yeah, shout out
engineering. I love that.
Yeah, also to pull out the manual as you're falling out of the sky has to be one of the most frantic experiences you can have.
That's what you're supposed to do.
I know, but could you imagine like trying to read when you're that stressed.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, that's what they're trained for, right?
True. But you're saying Captain Sully had done this for 4 decades and had never had this happen.
No, yeah, not a total engine failure or even a 1 engine failure.
At let alone 3,000 feet off the ground. Like, that's not that high.
No, yeah, they had just taken off. They were literally only like 90 seconds or like 100 seconds into their flight. So anyway, Harton had told them they could land on runway 13 back at LaGuardia, but Sully spoke back with very short and to the point phrases, I guess, that they were unable. Which was fine, as the air traffic controller, his job is to just move on to the next solution if the captain tells you they can't. So he gave a new solution. They could traffic for runway 31. But again, Sully told him they were unable. Harton wanted the airplane to return to LaGuardia, but after only a few short minutes, Flight 1549 was only 1,400 feet above the ground, and they had less than 3 minutes to find a suitable landing spot. Once again, Harton suggested a different runway, but Captain Sully told him he wasn't sure he could make any runway. He asked what was to their right, anything in New Jersey like Teterboro Airport. Teterboro Airport was on the New Jersey side of the Hudson, so it was to the right of the plane. First Officer Skiles was concerned about that question because seeing how things were going, it didn't seem like they would make Teterboro Airport. Even though they had never trained for this, because on the flight simulators, it wasn't possible to practice a water landing, Captain Sully had to think about the possibility of doing just that. In flight school, the most training they got for a water landing was a theoretical classroom discussion.
Really?
Yeah. But because he had learned his craft so well, he knew the airplane and his profession so intimately, Captain Sully knew he could set clear priorities. And so he chose to do only the highest priority items. And then he had to have the discipline to ignore everything else he didn't have time to do and treat them only as distractions and a potential detriment to his performance. What Captain Sully also knew was that multitasking is a myth. He said he was very well read on the neurobiology of it and said when we think we're multitasking, what we're actually doing is switching rapidly between tasks and not doing either of them very well. So he chose not to do too much.
Wow, he seems very well educated.
He's a very smart man. He's super cool. Within a few seconds, by memory, he had taken the first two remedial actions that they would eventually get to on the checklist over a minute later, which was over a third of the way through their remaining flight time. But he needed those actions to be effective immediately. He turned on the engine ignitions, so if the engines could recover, they would, and as I said earlier, he turned on the plane's APU. He knew they only had a few short minutes before they were going down, so he had to choose the best place for that to happen. Having flown into New York many times, Captain Sully knew there were really only three options. There were only two runways that might be reachable, but with the reaction time he had, they were not. And the only other place in the whole New York metro area, one of the most densely developed areas on the planet, where it might be possible to even try landing a large jet airliner would be the Hudson River. Half a minute after the birds hit and the captain declared an emergency, he had initially turned back toward LaGuardia. But as he did so, he realized he was already too low and slow, and that path would have taken them right over Manhattan, which would have been a very terrible place to go down. If they didn't make it back to LaGuardia, there would be hundreds of casualties. So because he had initially tried to turn back to LaGuardia, now he had no option but to land in the Hudson.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking, like, if you go down in Manhattan, that's like 9/11.
It's real bad.
Yeah.
I mean, he wouldn't be aiming for a
building,
but yes, yeah. It would be really bad. Captain Sully had suspected early on that they would most likely end up in the Hudson, but he tried to consider every option before that because obviously that isn't the most appealing option, to have a water landing that he had never done in January of all months.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Is it iced over?
No, it's just cold as hell.
Well, he's lucky it's not.
Yeah, I guess. But still, it was like almost to that temperature. I think the water was like 38 degrees or something.
Oh, yeah. That's cold.
Patrick Harton, who still was trying to get them to an airport, told Captain Sully they could land on runway 1 at Teterboro Airport. But again, all he got back was, can't do it. That was when Captain Sully informed him that they were going into the Hudson. Patrick Harton could hear what Captain Sully was saying, but he really couldn't wrap his head around what he was actually saying. Like, he heard the words, but they did not register a couple times because it felt like that would be a death sentence for everyone on board, and he did not want to accept that there were no more options for them other than the Hudson.
I mean, yeah. If pilots never practice this, they only talk about it.
Right. Captain Sully said, thankfully, First Officer Skiles was the best colleague he could have had for a situation like this. The time pressure and the workload was so intense that they didn't even have time to talk about what had happened and what they should do about it. They were basically able to collaborate without words, knowing intuitively during this crisis what they could do to help each other. Captain Sully said, quote, had Jeff not also had 20,000 hours of flying time like I did, had he not been a captain before, had he not been so experienced, he wouldn't have known either to do that or how to do that. And by that point, Officer Skiles also thought the Hudson was their best bet because it was literally the only place they could land, which is crazy.
Yeah, I know, but I guess they must have gotten far enough away to the point where you just can't come back. Because if you think about it, they're going away at like jet engine speed. So to get back with no engines is probably impossible.
Yeah, especially like with all the buildings and everything around. Like you had two cities on either side of the Hudson. Like,
yeah, I mean, you would have needed to be flying directly towards another airport.
Right. Captain Sully had only one moment where he had a chance to make an announcement in the cabin. He knew he had to choose his words carefully, and so he took a precious 3 to 4 seconds to consider what he was going to say. He wanted to sound confident and not agitated because he knew courage could be contagious. Fortunately, he said, they had the advantage of having a very well-defined and very concise aviation vocabulary in which there are certain single words that are rich with meaning, according to him. Brace is one of those words. It signals to the flight attendants that an emergency landing is imminent and they should help the passengers avoid injury during the landing. That way they can evacuate later by shouting their commands to the passengers. And in the spur of the moment, he chose the word impact to give both the passengers and the crew a vivid image of what to expect. Because without engine thrust, they would be using gravity to provide forward motion of the airplane. He said if they were in a hotel elevator, it was like they were descending at 2 floors per second. He knew it was going to be a hard landing, but he didn't know how hard, because neither he nor Jeff had ever practiced this kind of landing before. So altogether, he said, this is the captain, brace for impact. And that was all they got.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care how confidently you say that. I'm freaking out.
Of course. Of course I'm freaking out. I'm losing my mind.
Whoa.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Before that, the passengers were sitting there knowing something was wrong and anxiously waiting for some kind of answer. And finally, when Captain Sully came over the loudspeaker, the passengers were hoping they would hear the captain say, "Everything is going to be fine, we're turning around and going back to the airport," but that is not at all what they heard. Almost immediately, Captain Sully heard through the armored cockpit door the two flight attendants at the front, Donna and Sheila, shouting their commands at the passengers in unison. "Brace, brace, brace. Heads down, stay down." The passengers had no idea what that even meant. They had never had to do that before. Everyone was so confused. Like, what the hell do you do and how do you brace for impact? What's the best thing for me to do here? Clay Presley realized they weren't going back to LaGuardia and very quickly sent his wife an email from his phone that said, "I love you." He didn't say anything else because he didn't want her to worry. Hearing the words the flight attendants were saying was very scary for the passengers, but to Captain Sully, those words comforted him. He knew he had chosen the right words, he had gotten his crew on the same page, and that if he could find a way to get this aircraft to the surface intact, it would float long enough for the flight attendants to evacuate the passengers and for New York Waterway to send their ferries to pick them up.
Whoa. You know?
Yeah. And the ferry aspect of this whole thing was critically important because the air temperature was 21 degrees Fahrenheit and the water was about 38 degrees Fahrenheit, which for all you Celsius heads out there, it's basically freezing. 21 is below freezing. 38 is almost freezing.
Yeah. I mean, how long can you live in 38 degree water?
Not long.
A couple minutes.
If you're fully submerged? Yeah, not long.
Yeah. I mean, let alone if you're old or...
Right.
You know, a baby.
Exactly. And there were old people and babies on this flight. Right before landing, Captain Sully asked Jeff Skiles a question. He said, "Got any ideas?"
What do you got? You got any ideas here?
What do you think? What they were doing was very much a team effort, and he just wanted to know if there was anything Jeff could think to do that would make this situation any better for them. And Jeff's answer was, actually not.
Well, you're on the same page.
Yeah. I mean, if nothing else. Skiles knew they had done everything they could. As Captain Sully maneuvered the plane down, Skiles started calling out airspeeds and altitudes. That way, Captain Sully could focus fully on landing the damn thing. Because at some point, Captain Sully was going to have to begin raising the nose of the airplane to gently touch down before landing. But that was a very difficult thing to judge, because the depth perception was really difficult like that, and if they misjudged it, even by a fraction, they might start too soon and get too slow and hit too hard, or they'd start too late and descend into the water too rapidly. So they had to really get it just right.
Yeah, I actually am remembering a documentary I watched about this, and it was something so specific, like you needed to land at 13 degrees.
Right. It was very, very specific like that. I mean, they didn't know exactly what the right thing was because they couldn't practice it. So this was just purely based on experience and
intuition
and feel. Yeah.
Whoa.
Skiles said they were so focused on what they were doing, he really thought everything would work out. In the cabin, the passengers prepared for impact, but even they were trying to figure out what they could do next. Right before they touched down, someone yelled, "Be ready at the doors." And one person at the doors yelled back, "We're ready."
At least there's that.
Right. People looked around to make sure they knew where their nearest exit was, because if the water started coming in quickly, they needed to know where to go. And then, even Captain Sully and First Officer Skiles had to brace as they finally touched down. As the plane hit the water, Skiles said it looked like the plane was going straight for the bottom of the Hudson. They couldn't see anything but water cascading over the windshield. When they hit the water, they did hit hard, and the deceleration was rapid, but uniform, which was important. In the cabin, they said it was like a tornado. The plane was coming apart in places, and a few people were thrown around the cabin. When the plane finally came to a stop, the front of the plane popped up. And it seemed to be intact as it began gently rocking in the waves. This plane was now a boat, kind of.
Oh my God. Could you imagine getting thrown around the cockpit and then, you know, your life pretty much flash before your eyes?
You send your dying messages to your family and loved ones, and then it's just floating on the water.
And now you're just bobbing.
It's such an eerie thought. Yeah, and then it's quiet for a few seconds.
Wow.
As you like hear the water sloshing around as if you're in a boat. Crazy.
Yeah, you're just sitting there like shaking, yeah. Sheet white.
Oh my God, yeah. Captain Sully and First Officer Skiles both looked up at each other and at the same time looked at each other and said, well, that wasn't as bad as I thought. They weren't quite high-fiving yet because they still had to get 155 people out of the airplane.
That's the easy part.
Sure, I guess, but maybe not. That's terrifying. The water's coming in.
Just to get people out of the plane probably is easier than something you've never done before in 40 years of flying.
I guess. In the cabin, everyone just sat there looking around and waiting for what would come next. What that was, they didn't know.
Yeah, out onto the wing, folks.
Yeah. Flight 1549 was in the air for only 5 minutes and 8 seconds.
Well, that's got to be the longest 5 minutes of anyone's life. Really, yeah, four.
But also think about how short that time is. They had made a remarkable landing, but now the crew and passengers were facing a new but very real danger. The plane was leaking, and the ice-cold water of the Hudson began pouring into the cabin. Captain Sully headed for the cabin while First Officer Skiles shut down the plane. He had to do the evacuation checklist, which was about 45 seconds before he went back to the cabin himself. So when Captain Sully initially opened the cockpit door and was in the doorway to the main cabin, he shouted one word to the passengers and crew, evacuate. The water was very cold, so their feet and legs were now freezing, but they did what they could to get the doors open. Air traffic controller Patrick Harton had no idea what had happened to this plane. Once they had gone below 300 feet of altitude, he couldn't see the plane anymore on his radar. When the aircraft disappeared from his radar, he assumed there wouldn't be any survivors. He was obviously taken away from his station because he was in no state to continue working. He was brought to a room without TV or internet to undergo questioning and drug testing, and he needed to make a statement about his account of what happened. But he was still in shock. He sent a quick text to his wife that said, "Had a crash. I'm not okay. Can't talk now." He thought that he was the very last person to talk to anyone on board that plane. He wouldn't know what happened or that anyone lived for a full 45 minutes.
Wow.
He thought basically 155 or so people died.
Yeah, well, I mean, what else could he have done?
For 45 minutes. Yeah.
You know?
No, I mean, there was nothing he could have done. But still, I mean, how could you not be traumatized by something like that?
Yeah.
Seeing that the plane was already taking on quite a bit of water at the back, they decided it wasn't a good idea to open the rear doors of the plane, so the passengers were redirected to the front to be evacuated there. So anyone at the back of the plane had to then go to the front. And wow. There's 155 people on this plane.
A lot of discipline. I mean, I'm thinking how long it takes to get people off when there's luggage.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And that was another thing. I have this written a little bit later, but people were trying to take their things.
Dude, leave your laptop.
Yeah.
We're gonna die.
Leave the luggage. I promise you can get new clothes, but you can't necessarily get a new life. And neither can anyone else on this plane. So get the hell out of here.
I know, but to be fair, was the handbag Gucci?
Was it a Birkin?
Was it?
Have you ever heard of Birkins? Those are like $30,000 bags.
Is it Cartier?
Could be.
Could be.
And in that case, that's worth a life.
Yeah. Well,
just kidding.
I'm saying it's not worth a life, but you might think about it.
Oh, God. Well, these people clearly were. I don't know if they had Cartier or Gucci, but it doesn't matter at all.
Dude, you got to get off
that's
the plane.
That's ridiculous. Get off the plane, you psycho. Due to a malfunction of the front right door, it started to close again, which was terrifying because they had opened it and inflated a life raft / like slide thing. And so a passenger had to quickly volunteer to hold the door open, and the other passengers had to evacuate under his arm as he was pushing back the door. That's a very brave, very brave passenger, because then you'd only be down to like one door instead of two, because they already had taken two away at the rear.
Yeah, and you're the last one off the plane,
right?
Pretty much.
Well,
except for maybe
not,
the pilot.
Exactly, it's the pilots who are last. But
you're the last passenger.
Right. Once the doors had been open, passengers began working their way out to the wing. Passenger Brad Wenzel had an interesting journey through this impact and everything. He said, quote, "Every dad knows the smell of their kids, a combination of bath, mischief, baby powder. I could physically smell it, and I was very calm in that panicked time. For whatever reason, it calmed me. It straightened me out for a second, where I could actually absorb dying. Since he was able to think clearly, Wenzel was able to help other passengers to safety, including mother, Tess Sosa, and her baby. He said, quote, besides the people grabbing their stuff, which was slowing things down, there was also a traffic jam on the wing because there was no more room for people to step. Quote, I said, if you don't go back and help her, you're never going to sleep a day in your life. And then I made the decision, in my opinion, that changed my life. I chose being helpful over me. Outside, the temperature of the air was well below freezing. And once Clay Presley got out onto the wing, he noticed that the passengers around him had grabbed their life vests and their seat bottoms for a flotation device, which he had not done. So he had nothing. Once Giles had finished his checklist, he went back into the cabin to begin helping people evacuate, and he saw that one of the flight attendants had been injured. She had a long, deep gash in her leg that had been caused by one of the cargo compartments that had come through the cabin floor upon impact. Skiles, Captain Sully, and a few male passengers were doing what they could to gather seat cushions for flotation devices and were passing them up to people. Clay Presley was looking around on the wing, wondering what the hell happens now. Is the plane gonna blow up? Was it gonna go down fully? They had no idea. There were somewhere around 6 to 8 people on his side of the plane that went into the water. One or two of them had panicked when they made it out onto the wing and jumped in thinking they could swim to shore. But they quickly realized that that would not be possible due to how cold the water was. So they had to be pulled back up onto the wing, and now it was worse because they were freezing and soaking wet. At the back of the plane, water continued coming inside, and not everyone was out on the wing yet. Passengers had to be directed forward, some climbing over top of seats to avoid being in the water that was coming in the plane. The plane wasn't going to be floating much longer. First Officer Skiles and Sully were in water up to their knees and had helped people get out of the plane, but they were freezing. By the time they got everyone out, they were very confident that nobody was left inside the plane, but they had no idea what was happening out on the wings. Skiles and Sully were the last two out of the plane and onto the wings. In the life raft, the injured flight attendant was given first aid by some of the surrounding passengers as they waited for help. People had seen the crash. People all at the airport, people were just outside and saw the plane hit the water. There were people on ferries that saw the crash. So many people knew that this was happening, and ferry captains had already begun going over to the plane, and LaGuardia had sent ferries over to the plane using radios. So as soon as the passengers saw these ferries approaching, which was after only a few minutes, there was a collective sigh of relief because they knew they were going to be okay. Within minutes, help had arrived for passengers on the wings and in the rafts. First on the scene were passenger ferries, and then the Coast Guard and fire department showed up. The waterway ferries pulled right up to each of the wings and had basically a ladder hanging off the front, and people on the boat had to help pull people on one by one. And everyone was freezing. A lot of people were wet. Most people didn't have coats, and some were injured. And on the ferries, the passengers still were not at ease because they had no idea if everyone had made it off the plane. They didn't know if anyone had died. It was around the time that ferries were gathering people that Patrick Harton finally heard that the plane had landed and people lived. And not just a few people, they told him that it looked like everyone had made it off the plane. He couldn't believe it. It was incredible news. He said it felt like the weight of the world was lifted off of his shoulders. The world watched as every passenger and member of the crew was plucked from Flight 1549. Due to the current of the river, passengers were dropped off at different ferry stations, which initially made it difficult to know if everyone had made it to the shore. Some groups were separated, some family members ended up on the New York side, while others were on the New Jersey side of the Hudson, so people had no idea where their family members were, and after 4 hours, it became clear that everyone had made it out alive. Thankfully. But it took 4 hours.
Who cares how long? I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's insanely incredible that all of them lived. And like, even if they had injuries, they were pretty minor. But yeah, I mean, 4 hours to be like, did my sister or daughter or whoever get off the plane? That's a long time.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, yeah, that sucks. But at the end of it, it was okay.
Yeah, totally. I just can't imagine those 4 agonizing hours.
A lot of real, like real anxiety from this flight. I feel like this story is like the core of kind of why I love survival stories. Mm. It's like, what can you do about this? Like just a complete freak accident. And then everyone kind of came together. You kind of see the best side of people. And, you know, we have the happiest ending and everyone lives.
Yeah, I agree. It's a really incredible story. It's also so lucky that they had Captain Sully and First Officer Skiles, because they were both unbelievably experienced and like good intuition and instincts, and landed it safely, which is like a huge feat.
Yeah.
So I mean, it was like a combination of people doing everything they could to like help each other, and the really amazing experience and like amazing people in the crew as well. It's super cool.
Yeah, I can't believe it. I mean, I have to imagine if I'm Captain Sully, retirement is on the horizon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But yeah, they're super lucky to have both of them. I mean, how crazy is it that you get demoted just because like happenstance, your company happened to have a financial hit?
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, this is the type of stuff that makes you think that things happen for a reason, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like weird circumstances all come together.
Sure. It's cool. In his book, Captain Sully described the moment that he learned everyone had made it out alive as an unimaginable relief. Everyone was extremely grateful for Captain Sully and First Officer Skiles because they knew without them, they would all be dead. The aircraft had to remain in the Hudson for the time being and continued flowing downstream until it became trapped at the riverbank. And it was finally salvaged a few days later, which was when the investigation began.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Rumors had started spreading quickly after the crash, especially that one engine would have still produced thrust, or that the crew could have actually made it to an airport. They wanted to uncover the cause of the crash, even though it was determined pretty quickly what the cause was, because everything was recorded, as is on every airplane. And they knew it was a bird strike, but they wanted to figure out if that was it, or if it was a combination of something else going wrong with a bird strike. They also wanted to make sure Captain Sully and Skiles did everything right. They wanted to interview the crew, which had actually become a pretty difficult thing to do because they had become instant heroes, and everyone wanted to hear from them. They had multiple media appearances, and it was just overall a media frenzy, and they were basically like new celebrities. So the investigation people were like, we want to interview you. And they're like, actually, hang on, I have to go on late night.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going on, I got Colbert at 6. You want to talk to me
I
now?
I got Jimmy Kimmel tomorrow. I really can't do it.
That's really funny.
I know. They initially didn't have the engines because they came off of the airplane and they couldn't find them. But using video footage, because this crash was caught on video, you can watch it go down, they were able to locate where the engines would be. And still, it took 3 days to find them because of the current, but eventually they did find them. They also were able to recover all of the audio recordings immediately. And funnily enough, the fact that First Officer Skiles had been straight out of training on the A320 plane actually helped him, because he knew immediately which part of the handbook to turn to follow procedures.
Wow, okay, so he didn't have to like go through the appendix. Which is crazy.
Yeah, he had just gone through training, so he's like, oh, page whatever. Like, I know this.
That's crazy.
I know.
You know what I mean? Like, what are the chances that the guy who knows exactly what page to turn to is the co-pilot
right
on this flight?
It's insane. The checklist, however, that he had to turn to is made for a scenario that assumes the airplane is at cruising altitude. So Skiles had only been able to make it through a page and a half of the 3-page checklist before they landed on the Hudson. And actually, overcomplicated checklists have been to blame for aviation fatalities in the past. Ultimately, it was determined that the crew did everything right and were incredible, as we know. But investigators did realize that none of the major airlines used simulators to teach pilots how to land on water, which is an extremely dangerous and difficult thing to do. But training for water landing and ditching an airplane is a very difficult thing to simulate for, I guess, a lot of reasons. And also it happens so rarely that they're like, okay, it doesn't really make sense to train for it. But still, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I'm like, I kind of want them to train for it instead of just having a hypothetical conversation in the classroom. Like,
yeah, I know. I'm like, how many hours of training do they actually go through? Like, can't you give them a chapter?
Sure.
Or like, you know, or you something. Know what I mean? At least try and simulate it. Right. You know?
I don't know.
Like, anything would be better than just talking about it. I would have to imagine.
Right.
I mean, you're never going to practice it in real life, no. But something.
Hopefully technology has come a longer way and the simulations have gotten better because personally, I'd like for them to train for that, you know, because not everyone is Captain Sully.
Yeah. I mean, God, now we know too much because like, it's like, well, they don't know how to, they don't train for this. Fuck. We're going in the river.
That's the curse, isn't it?
God, yeah.
We know too much.
We're like, is it Captain Sully?
Yeah, right. No, my man's retired. He's chilling.
Dude, if I were him, I'd never step into a cockpit again.
Well, I mean, it is what he loves to do. So, but he is, you know, he's retired because he is of retiring age, I suppose.
Yeah, no,
I don't
know. 40 years, man. Go take your pension and get out of there.
Exactly. But I mean, the fact that they didn't have simulation for this is just even more proof that Captain Sully is incredible and that he did everything right. He kept the nose up and the wings level, and he let the tail hit the water first to slow down the plane, and ultimately everyone survived the impact.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Right.
But to put that together while your plane is going down in like 60 seconds.
Right. Seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they did create a simulator to determine if Captain Sully made all the right calls and if he could have made it back to the airport in time. So they found that 50% of the time their pilots could make it back. But then they gave their pilots a 30-second lag since he had to go through this in real time and had attempted to restart the engines, which took about 30 seconds. And with that, every single one of the test pilots crashed. So he absolutely did the right thing by landing in the Hudson. There was no chance he could have made it back to LaGuardia because with the lag time of like having to try to restart the engines, with that amount of time he had left, he could not have made it back to either airport, Teterboro or LaGuardia.
Yeah, that's crazy. I just can't believe that you could make it back at all, even if you turned around immediately. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me because, oh, maybe it does. But I'm just thinking, like, however fast you go away, there's no way you're coming back that fast without engines.
I don't know. But 50% of the time when they did it immediately, they were able to make it back. But that's only 50% of the time, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, that's 50-50 for everyone dying.
Yeah. And that's on, like,
plus hundreds of civilians.
Yes. And that's when you turn back immediately and you know the scenario and you know what's going to happen. Like, this happened to him in a time where he thought he was having a very routine flight and it was very shocking. Like, you have to kind of factor in processing time a little bit.
Yeah.
The other thing was that since he turned on the APU immediately, which is like an emergency generator, that saved everyone because that was an interesting call for him to make. Since that wasn't at the top of his checklist, like they were going down a checklist, and he just did that on his own. And because of that, even after losing the engines, he was still able to see his equipment and keep things running in the plane that wouldn't be running if the engines had just failed. So I don't fully understand the engineering of an airplane, but from what I can gather, when you flip the APU switch, it's like it keeps certain things running in the airplane that wouldn't necessarily be running if the engines completely failed, which they did. So he had a backup generator that kept a lot of things running in the plane like immediately, which was extremely important for the plane to continue flying.
Interesting. I wonder how many things you just never would think of, you know, that the engine is powering.
Yeah, I don't know. But him flipping it that quickly and not waiting for it to go down the checklist, even a couple of seconds, like saved their lives, it seems. It seems like a very delicate balance, you know?
Yeah, I was like, how many things did he do that were off script that were just intuition? Like, there's no time to even have a conscious thought.
No, he did. He was just doing it, yeah.
Yeah.
So this was the combination of a fantastic crew and also a good airplane. They also tried to figure out how they can stop birds from being able to take down planes, because that's an issue and has caused a couple of bad crashes. And apparently LaGuardia in particular was bad with birds because they had a goose problem on nearby Rikers Island. And over the past years, officials have had to round up geese from Rikers Island and euthanize them, which is kind of controversial and, you know, people don't like it, but like they were literally taking down planes. So I had no idea that that was a thing that had to happen, but planes apparently do undergo bird tests where they shoot frozen bird carcasses into engines to test plane engines. But
I'm sorry. That's got to be the most fun job.
Maybe.
Are you kidding me? It's like, hey, we're going to go shoot birds into the engine today.
Right. But to pass this test, the engines don't have to keep running. They just have to stay together. Like they can't completely fall apart. And they did that on this plane. I mean, they stopped, but they didn't fall apart. So they figured out that the problem was that the birds were way bigger than the ones that they test with, and they weren't local birds. They had come from Canada, so they couldn't fix that problem. Like, they couldn't go get these birds and, like, give them a knuckle sandwich. They were coming down from Canada. And so theoretically, that means it could happen again. And it seems like now they have specialized radar that sweeps the area for birds, but from what I understand, that's kind of still in like the testing phase. And it also, it's not everywhere. Like, I think it's in New York and I don't really know if it's anywhere else. So as of now, it seems like the best defense against birds is having a really good crew.
Well.
Which is terrifying.
That's fun.
Hey, well, it's happened once. What are the odds it'll happen again? Right?
Right. I'm like, how many planes encounter birds?
I mean, I don't know.
That hit both engines at the same time.
Right. I think the problem was is that these were very big birds and it was a lot of them.
Yeah. I mean, they flew right into the V.
Pretty much. Yeah. So this year marks 15 years since the crash, but Captain Sully still feels the weight of saving 155 people on board. He said, "My definition of success for that flight was complete, absolute. Had even one person perished, I would have considered it a tragic failure. I couldn't have celebrated any of this." And he's also 72 now. Captain Sully's landing thrust him into the spotlight with honors that included an invite to former President Barack Obama's 2009 inauguration, a dramatized retelling of the crash in 2016's Sully, which is a movie that Tom Hanks stars in. He plays Captain Sully. And the Sullenberger Aviation Museum, which now houses the Airbus 320. Captain Sully says one reason why the crash continues to resonate all these years later is because it gave people hope and was a bright spot during the 2008 to 2009 financial crisis. He said there was a bit of good news that people needed to hear to reassure them that human nature wasn't just about self-interest and greed, but that we all had the potential to rise to the occasion, work together, and save every single life. Although, still, he says he stayed mindful to the fact that while the world may have celebrated what went on that day, it still was very traumatic for everyone on the airplane and their families. People were traumatized by it, but they didn't even really realize it until later. Michael Leonard, who at the time worked for Belk Department Stores, was on the flight with his colleagues, and he recalled working to push people up to the ferry workers as the passengers stood on the wings of the plane, helping others, including his boss, who ended up in the chilly water. Throughout this scary ordeal, the 52-year-old said it never crossed his mind that he could die. He said, "It wasn't until Monday after the crash, when my company brought in a therapist for the six of us who were on the flight to talk to, and I'm sitting there with five colleagues, all women who I work with, and hearing their stories, and every single one of them made me cry." Leonard said it took him weeks before he could understand and process what had happened, and he said it very much changed his entire life. Captain Sully also said this was life-changing for him. He said, "I have a richer, fuller life than I did before. I'm doing things professionally as a keynote speaker that I never anticipated. I never thought I'd be good at it. I was never one who sought the limelight or wanted to be the life of the party or was comfortable talking in front of big groups. And now it's amazing what you can learn to do and become good at." He also said, the passengers feel like they've gotten a second chance in life, and they change directions and are trying to live a truer path, a more authentic life. Some, like Leonard and Wenzel, have made major changes to their lives, from relationships to jobs, and after making a career pivot, Lawrence now owns his company and has flown around the world 15 times. He said, I could be gone tomorrow. Do something simple and easy. You could just be gone, so why not take chances? Another thing that's important to many of the survivors is getting a chance to spend time with each other. Leonard says he refers to his fellow passengers as his crash buddies. He said, I'm very much in contact with the five former work colleagues, and there's a group of us that meet regularly. They play poker and they hang out.
Fun. Just crash buddies crashing at each other's places.
Maybe.
Yeah.
This year, Captain Sully, passengers, and a few first responders got together for a reunion at the Paley Center for Media in New York City. Tom Hanks, who played Sully in the Clint Eastwood-directed film, made an appearance via pre-recorded video. So even Tom Hanks was there, kinda. Jeff Skiles was also there and said that the event was a great way to reconnect and said, we keep in touch and will, I'm sure, for the rest of our lives. Captain Sully said, I think that one of the things this story has done is to remind people of the potential we have and that it's still a source of hope, despite how divided we are. Ultimately, we will do what we can and make life better for the next generation. Upon re-entering private life, Captain Sully has resumed his profession as a keynote speaker to audiences around the world and continues his advocacy for safety in global air travel. And this was really cool that I had no idea had just happened, but Jeff Skiles retired from American Airlines after his decades-long flying career literally on Sunday.
Wait, this week?
Like last Sunday. Yeah.
Whoa.
So,
well, congratulations to him.
Yeah. So the article I read about him retiring was updated yesterday. And the other articles that were written about him retiring were from like 15 hours ago. So quite literally this month in 2024, a couple days ago, he retired from flying.
That is so crazy.
I know.
This is the week you chose to talk about.
I had no idea. Congratulations to him. It said he was celebrating his 65th birthday the following day. And according to various sources, his last flight was American 87 from London Heathrow Airport to Chicago O'Hare. So that was his final flight, and he just did it. Congrats, Jeff Skiles.
Lovely.
You did amazing.
You did awesome. It is time to collect that pension and start collecting that Social Security, baby. Come on now.
Go hit a golf ball or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Go take a trip to Florida. I don't know.
What do retired
do what
people
you
do?
Need to do. Take a bath.
Sure.
I don't know.
Oh, I took a bubble bath the other day with a nice glass of white wine. Ooh, Jeff, you're missing out.
Jeff.
Do it.
Try it out, Jeff.
But anyway, that's...
Could you imagine if either of them listened? There's no way.
No, but there's that's... No, I mean, hey, they're amazing and we love them. And that's the story of Miracle on the Hudson.
Yeah.
Captain Sully.
Captain Sully and Jeff. I mean,
and Jeff Skiles.
Let's be honest. If they're listening, I'll one-up Tom Hanks and do a full video call live. Okay?
Sure. Hey, you want to FaceTime with us? We'd love to say,
We're
hey.
Like Tom Hanks.
Yeah, we're just as important. Do you even know who I am?
Do you know who I am?
No, I really want to watch Sully. I haven't seen it yet. And I wanted to watch it before we recorded, but I also kind of wanted you to like not know the whole story yet.
Yeah, unfortunately, so, I did.
Yeah, but that's okay.
I watched, I don't think it was Sully, but it was like some documentary about it.
Yeah, no, I want to watch specifically Sully because, I mean, Tom Hanks, hello. He's amazing.
True. But yeah,
I feel like there isn't a role that he couldn't just absolutely devour.
You think he could be a drag queen?
Sure. Why not? I'd watch that movie.
That would show true range.
I'd eat that shit up immediately.
No, but the thought of Slay coming out of Tom Hanks' mouth is crazy. You know
getting,
what I mean?
We're getting away from the
I'm
actual
sorry,
point.
But this is how the brain works
sure.
over here.
Anyway, reel it back in.
Reel it back in. Yeah, I mean, it's the best kind of story.
Yeah, it's the
really
best.
Really is. Everyone lived. People came together. You got to see the best side of humanity. And both pilots get to go out on top. I mean, what more could you really want?
Yeah, I specifically picked it for this week because this week is Thanksgiving. And I figured we could all do for some good news. You know?
Do for some thank.
Yeah, we could all be a little thankful and be like, hey, this is a good story. And now I don't want to be sad for the rest of the day because it's a good one. Everyone lived. and they were heroes. And yeah, I don't know. It's true. Cool.
And you know what? What's your good thing? What are you thankful for?
What am I thankful for?
Yeah.
Well, I'm thankful that we get to go home and hang out with my family. I haven't seen them in a long time, so I'm going to get to see them. And I'm very excited. We're going to hang out and we're going to eat stuffing. You know, all the important stuff to me. We're going into the city for a day. It's going to be a good time. I'm looking forward to it. And I am front loading my work so that I can have the whole week off. So I'm getting a little vacation time too out of it.
Whoop, whoop.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
What's
and you know
good
what?
Thing?
The stuffing is good stuff. Oh, let me tell you that.
It's good stuffing. Hello. Let's go. Anyway, what's your good thing?
Well, I have a great thing this week.
Hey,
that I'm
great
thankful
thing.
For. Number one, I have secured a new job.
Hell yeah. Let's go.
To be employed, which is very calming.
Huge.
Huge, if you will.
Very big.
But what I think I'm more thankful for is you and all my friends and family who kind of kept saying that, you know, you'll figure it out and it'll be okay. Because, I don't know, I had never been unemployed before. And I always knew that it's one of the most stressful things you can go through.
Yeah.
But having gone through it personally, like anything, you just understand it at a deeper level.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of appreciation for how hard it is now.
Sure.
And yeah, I just really appreciate everyone around me, including you, that really helps me out.
Well, that's very, very sweet. Thank you. And you're amazing. I knew you could do it. I didn't doubt it for 1 second. I was like, yeah, you're stressed, but you got it in the bag. You're
right,
going to be
fine.
Yeah,
but I did. Yeah, you know, it's like one thing to be like, yeah, you got it. And I can say it and like kind of even believe it. I'm like, yeah, I could do it, but I don't have it right now.
Yeah.
You know,
I get it. It's definitely a stressful time, or it was. And so I was just trying to project positivity and manifestation at your job search. I was like, listen, I'm going to act as if you already have a good job because I know you're going to get one. It's going to be fine. You're going to be good. And also you're smart and capable and all the good things. So
I agree. And we can end on that.
Yeah, we can end on that.
We can end on that. I mean, telling me how great I am at the end. What more could I ask?
Yeah,
for?
How can we and make this about us?
And I couldn't agree more.
Great. Well, anyway, thank you so much for listening. We're also thankful for you guys. You guys are the best. We couldn't do it without you. Thank you for listening.
I'm so thankful that this is still going. This is crazy.
Yeah, it's the best.
Like we would have never thought 4 years out we'd be here. Crazy. So yeah, very big thank you to all of you.
Absolutely. We love you. If you want to check out a bunch of bonus episodes, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. You can also vote for stories you want to hear and hear a bunch of them. They're great. Head over to the merch shop, get some discounted merch. You can find the link to that in our Instagram bio. You can also look at all the pictures we post of all the stories we talk about. I'm catching up on that, so I'm sorry about it, but I'm doing better. If you or anyone knows a story of survival that you'd like to share with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. We have a TikTok that is not today podcast and a Twitter that is not today podcast. And the TM that a podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
Plus, terms and conditions apply. When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge,
waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.